while his mind was broadening and expanding and he was able to do calculations easily, for example, that were difficult before, the others around him didn't grow and expand. And so the more he became, the greater distance there was between him and the people he was trying to communicate with. Even though he liked it and he wanted that, it turned out to be something that distanced him further from those whose assistance he needed and desired. Would you say that he expanded spiritually as well as mentally through this contact? Yes, which allowed him to survive his incarceration. Say more about that. The professor was sent to an institution. No, I mean, about the ability to survive. He was able to separate himself and his personality from the experience and what goes on there so that he could live through it physically, although it was an unpleasant experience, and maintain his memories and personality and sense of self, if not for ready display to all physical individuals who interacted with him, meaning other patients and staff and family, then for his own awareness, since he didn't want to demonstrate that personality, because they reacted in such an unaccepting way to him. If you change and grow and expand while those around you are maintaining themselves, after a time they may not relate to you the same way they did in the beginning. Sometimes, if they are threatened by a change or growth or expansion, even if it's spiritual and in his case, it was spiritual and intellectual, they might react in such a way to say, well, not, he's different, but, which is the case, but rather he's crazy. Ben Bentoff used to say that the leading edge of your culture is in a mental institution. There was a lot of truth in that at that time, and there is hope. Not with most of the staff in such institutions, but the staff of tomorrow, some of whom are revealing themselves today in such institutions in your country and in Europe, might just change the way so-called insane people are treated. Some of them are definitely needing treatment, and they are, as you say, off. Others are simply presenting an alternative. I have an awful lot of scientific questions here. I didn't know who I was going to talk to today. Yesterday it wasn't really clear, when I talked to the scientist, that there was a fellow who the professor had talked to named Thomas Harskin, who lived in Chicago and had interacted with. It must have been the Andromedans on another ship then. Yes. One of your crewmates. That's right. Okay, and I had asked for the thrust of that conversation, but we either didn't understand each other or he didn't know. Can you say what you were trying to? The basic thing is, here we are, this is who we are, this is where we're from, and this is why we're here. We'd like to get to know you better. Meaning as an Earth person and you as the person they were contacting, and this is generally what we're offering. That was the whole thing. Was it different than this magnetic envelope that you gave the professor? Oh yes. Everybody was presented with things along the lines of their interest and... Dorbell interrupts, then let us stop and resume next time. Thank you very much. Do you want scientific questions or shall I stay on the type of things that we did today? Anything. Anything? All right. Thank you. It was lovely to talk to you. My pleasure. Next headline, is part 5, Leah, the cultural specialist and social diplomat, part 2. August 8, 2001. I'm here. And under headline, averting an atomic catastrophe. After you saved us from that atomic explosion, your crew was told not to come to Earth for this 8,000-year period. Was it somebody on Andromeda who told you that, or was it some confederation that you belonged to, or it was people who assigned such tasks as to train and so on? We were simply reassigned, that's all. We weren't told we were bad. We were. It was suggested to us what might have occurred had we done nothing, and that our decision. No one person on the ship can make decisions like that. Someone might say that we can do something, and everyone has to agree, right down to playmate. Everyone. There is no rank, so to speak. But you suggested it. Tut, tut, tut. Long pause. Different people have different jobs, but the suggestion did not originate with me. No. It originated with another crew member. And that person said we could do this. It wasn't a let's do this, it was, we could do this, and how do you all feel about it? And we all agreed that we could do it. We considered if it was interference, but at the time we felt it was justified, since at that time we felt that the damage could destroy life on your planet as you know it. Not immediately, but the area initially mentioned was roughly, well, not two-thirds of Canada as you might have thought, but if you draw a vertical line through the middle of Canada and then you move a little to the west, a little less than half, the western part of Canada and Alaska and parts of the northwestern United States and a few other areas, parts of Russia, and so on. Just because of proximity, you understand. Probably not Japan. The initial damage would have affected those areas, but it would have gradually spread all over the planet, destroying all life as you knew it. And the only way to stop it, and stopping it would have been possible, by you, if we had done nothing, would be that you would have had to not only ban such weapons or use of such things in the future, but there would have to have been a, not just a crash program to train people to spiritually neutralize radiation, but that those out there who were already working on it would have had to have been embraced and so on. So every culture, every civilization, every tribe, every state, every country, everyone would have had to look toward their own, who they might know better, and decide who could do what and how they could be trained and what was the best training available and so on. It would have been nice, perhaps a good thing, but in the course of that, it might have been the case that fully a half to two-thirds of the global population would have either died or become sick. We felt that since it was so potentially catastrophic, what would be the point in allowing it to happen? How would you get your lessons? But we were mistaken. No. I think anybody would have done the same thing had they been able to. There's one sentence in the book that I feel is totally in error. It makes it sound like you did that routinely every time there was an atomic explosion, but you did not. No, but there's nothing routine. Some beings, not our ship, did do things like that, so I can't speak for other cultures and other ships. I can speak NEDESC.115 only for our vessel on a given voyage, as you might say, nautically. Okay, so whoever wrote that was just being optimistic. No, I can't say that, it's not an either, or. I'm saying that other cultures from other planets, other ETs as you say, might very well be involved in that. So the statement might have been true but not applied to us specifically. That may have been a simple misunderstanding. I asked if a three-dimensional person could live on Andromeda in his or her physical body, and you said no. But could the professor have lived on Andromeda in his expanded spiritual and mental condition, because he was most expanded by the time of these notes toward the end of the book? His physical body was still born and raised on Earth and had its needs. Ah. That's right. And we have learned that you have to feed it from what's on the planet, yes. There you are. That's why when your astronauts go to the moon, they don't pick berries there. Laughs, that's pretty good. The circulation of the professor's diaries. All right now, once the government got the professor's original diaries, they were then transmitted to other governments, right? Now we have just this translated mishmash, but his actual diaries, I think, were seen by many intelligence organizations on the planet. Yes, but not many. There's not as much sharing as you think. Some saw it. Some were allowed to see it, and although the documents have moved around a bit, there are not that many copies, because people may have been allowed to sit in a room and read them but not photograph them for later study. There has been some reproduction, but circulation has been limited. NEDESC 116 Is it possible that the people reading it, looking at the stature of the man who wrote it and the incredibly long duration of the contact, could they still think there are negative ETs coming? Is that a cause or one of the causes of this proposed weaponization of space, some of these ET contactee documents that have gotten out? I think that it is just what I would call extrapolated from your culture as you understand it, what I would call caution. Meaning that to equip a ship that flies from the Earth to even the Moon with weapon technology, the weapons are less designed for meeting space voyages than they are for meeting other Earth voyages. So extending the warlike preparation into space has more to do with other Earth dwellers. Turning it around and aiming it back at Earth. Yes. But rather the, how can we say? The voices of caution suggest bringing something along into space, just in case. I would rather say that it has to do with the voices of caution and preparation, basing their justification on the understanding of the human condition and extrapolating that it is possible to find people from other planets to be like that, too. It is better to be prepared. So that is the thing, rather than necessarily believing in evil extraterrestrials. I think most professionals do not believe that, even individuals who are suggesting to be prepared. Nevertheless, to the degree that they think about it themselves, they are concerned about that, and that is one of their motivations. The concern, of course, is less based upon facts than what do you call it? Science fiction? No. Stories. What do they call that? It's a legal term for that. I do not have the word. If I can get it, I'll display it. Bring it out later, okay, future visitors to planet Earth. Now, the Xpertes were here and they were evil and were fighting with the secret government, and they're gone. And the negative Syrians were terribly confused, and they're gone. Other than those two, who are in the past, there are no negative ETs due to come in here in the next 50 years, as far as I know, are there? Not as far as I know. That doesn't mean, of course, that when you meet people from other cultures, other planets, that you might not be startled or frightened or a little shook up by meeting them, but that doesn't make them negative as you say. You might feel that way meeting each other or meeting someone from another culture that is radically different from your own. That being might exhibit social customs that would be at the least startling, not intended to be harmful but rather perhaps even intended to be a blessing or a benevolent greeting. Any study of your researches into those points will show many examples. So such things are actually happening on Earth to prepare you for meeting space dwellers, so that you are not so insulated from the differences in cultures that you will simply scream and run into the woods. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with either one of you. It's just that perceptions. Your cultures are so vastly different that you make each other nervous. Right. Next headline, from the 8th to the 3rd dimension. Did the professor have to be in an altered state to see you, or did your device enable everyone to see you? For the most part he was in somewhat of an altered state in order to have his perception capacity heightened. Which he did every time you were with him. Either it would happen naturally on the ship from the ship's environment and energy, or when he was coming out to a spot to meet us, he would feel not quite the way he would normally feel. He would feel a little different in energy, he would notice things. Whereas before he might overlook some beautiful thing, now he would see it, it might have a little more shimmer to it. His perception was heightened. For example, one day you might be walking somewhere from here to there, walking with a purpose. But if one day you're simply strolling and you're very attuned in that moment, you might notice a colorful bee land on a flower and how it moves around the flower, and you might even smell that flower from a distance. On that day you might be more perceptive. How many hours in Earth time did you actually spend either with the professor or stimulating his expansion in some way? What did it take to get him to that point? Hundreds of hours. We had a lot of contact, using the broad definition you gave, lots of contact. Even though you don't have time and we're in a time loop, would you consider that you're in the future or the past or relatively the same time we are? I appreciate your attempt to be precise, but it does not relate. Dimensions are so vastly different that it really doesn't relate. I recognize what you are asking, but I either do not have the capacity to answer that question or cannot see how I can describe it. I understand. You're in the 8th dimension, and you're invisible on Earth, but in your own place. I can tell by the way you talk, you feel just as physical, just as solid, just as real, just as material. Exactly. Now, when you neutralized those atomic particles, were you functioning in the third dimension or the eighth? How did that work? You're on the Earth, so you have to be in the third. Actually, you're in the atmosphere. Well, we're near the planet. We used, of course, technology from our dimension, but it had to function on the third dimension in its impact, its effect, so it did. If this technology had been used in that precise way where we live, it would have done other things. But here the impact was exactly what we wanted, even though it didn't do those things it would have done in Andromeda. It was almost like, what can we use to accomplish the goal? Even though it wasn't meant for this. If it accomplishes the goal, well, that's what counts. It neutralized the radiation, and that's what you. That was the whole point. Even though what we used wasn't built to do that. But space voyagers are pretty flexible. Laughs, they have to be ingenious. I had all these years of training for my job and the crew had years of training for their jobs, so we knew how to do it. Next headline, the professor's feelings for Leah. How did you feel when the professor exhibited his feelings in a session with you, or did your magnetic envelope, created and sustained by your device, protect you from his very, very strong feelings? Yes, it did, and I didn't realize until much later on in our contacts that his friendliness was an attachment, a personal attachment. I thought he was just getting more comfortable and at ease. He was pretty friendly with the rest of the crew, so I had no reason, being from my culture, to suspect how he perceived me. I just felt he was adapting to the situation. But one of the other crew members told me later on that, and this is not exactly what he said, but a translation, he seems to be, perhaps, getting more interested in you than the rest of us, which suggests that of course he communicates with you better, but also we have to remember that you and your daughter, not counting Playmate, are the only females aboard. But he was writing in his diary. If you held his hand, he would say, oh, it was so romantic, and then he would talk about his love for you and, oh, he never said that to me. Yes. Well, he did in his diary, though. But you realize, he never expected that his private document would be revealed to the world. Of course. He wrote it only for himself. Next headline, life in other dimensions. Is there any meaning in the insignia on your uniform? A blue circle inside a gold triangle? Is that something that represents Andromeda, or is that a rank? It's not a rank, it's more like an insignia. For one thing, the blue circle represents the Earth mission, the blue circle being Earth, because aside from the white, as you approach, Earth is apparently blue. And the gold triangle represents all life. You see different levels stacked up in our solar system. As far as we know, the solar system is totally barren and sterile. Is there any life on dimensions other than the third that you see or that you've interacted with or that you know is there? Well, that's three questions, but I'm sorry. Is there life in other dimensions in our solar system? Yes, on every planet. Except the third dimension? There is some in the third dimension, but not on every planet. There isn't, of course. On that planet close to the Sun, Mercury, that's right. But there is certainly some life on Mars. Human life? Human beings from Earth? No, people from that planet. I should say humanoid, something we'd recognize. Oh, yes. Yes. On Mars now? Yes. Underground? Sometimes. Oh, that's going to be fun when we get there, because nobody on Earth knows that. Oh yes, that will be a lot of fun. What other planets have third dimensional life? There are some outposts on Saturn, even though it is a little rugged. Comentroon, yes, on some moons of Saturn, just so. https://galactic.no/rune/lid/book/may2016upload/date_with_gods_silver/. Really? But most life is at much more comfortable dimensions where what you would see, looking at, say, a planet like Saturn, would be quite different than what you see looking at it now with your eyes in the third dimension. You can see, of course, up to the eighth dimension. Can you see beyond that? No, if I try to look toward the ninth dimension, I can get a suggestion of it but not really see it very well. And I don't, with my own perceptions, see, say, the fourth or even the third dimension, I have to use an instrument. But, of course, our instruments were created by beings in the eighth dimension, as we're calling it. So needless to say, we can't see into the ninth. Chuckles, if you think about it, that makes sense. That's why we can't see even into the fourth. Next headline, moving toward a planetary society. There's a statement from you in the original book that says that our planet has no overseer. What does that mean? Do most planets have overseers? Your planet does not have an overseer, even now. On most other planets, there is some form of community. The closest thing you have to a community is government, but there is this government and that government and so on. You are trying to create a unified harmony with the United Nations, but there is so much resistance to that. Your best potential, and this is not a comparison, for such a being as an overseer, would be the person who speaks in the United Nations, the so-called Secretary General, meaning the Secretary in charge. But that's not quite right either. Yet that would be the overseer, someone who, when ships and so on came from elsewhere, could go there and there would be some creation of people from all over the planet who, with some planetary purpose, would say, this is who we are, and who are you? How can we help you? Like that. But there isn't that now, and it is almost universal everywhere else. Might our space station eventually become that, until we get a one world government? Oh, no. It is strictly an outpost, and it will be an extension of the societies you have now, who's in charge, who's next and so on. You need a planetary society, if not exactly a government, to help everybody to help each other so that people don't have abundance while others are suffering and desperate. The planetary society comes together to make sure that everybody has what they need and what they require to survive and live with comfort and grace. And after a time of doing that, then perhaps vehicles will venture toward you to perceive that you have moved far enough in your own social progress to be at least friendly enough to your own kind, to other Earth people, to perhaps be tolerant of us. It's not as far off as you think. Well, it can't be, if we're going out into space in 25 years. Don't be attached to years, but it's not far off, because it depends on generations and their attitudes. The so-called internet that you have right now is a big step forward, and those youngsters coming up at this time will be more likely to be conscious of people in other countries as being potential friends. It's kind of like when we were meeting with the professor, such a thing called pen pals existed. Now on the internet, you can have lots and lots of pen pals. It's going to be harder to propagandize to make some culture an enemy when we've been sharing with them through the computer. That's right. If you've been taught how to make shish kebab by your friend in another country and have had lots of pleasant conversations and exchanged points of view and talked about family and so on friends, what you like and dislike, it's really impossible to say, okay, they're the enemy, let's go over and hurt them. You're not going to want to hear that, much less participate, and that is intentional, that's part of the reason your own government is standing back and not interfering too much with the internet. Certainly there is plenty of justification, even rational justification, to interfere in some ways, and yet considering the degree to which the government is involved in other parts of your life, it is an anomaly that they're not as involved in this particular place. This has largely to do with policies that come from high places. They don't explain it to people, but they say, this is our wish. And when policies come from those areas, other people say, okay. Say what high places you're referring to? No, because that would create a support for hierarchy, when the whole point is that these beings who are saying this are trying to create a more level connection between people. But if I say that the king and queen have said this, then it's like you're right back into the hierarchy, oh, There's a king and a queen, then what am I? Yes. Were Phobos and Deimos satellites of Mars before the collision? I think one of them was, but the other one was a more recent arrival, what you call. I believe the ancient language term would be Deimos phonetically, Deimos. Next headline, cold fusion technology. At the time you were here, you were prophesying ahead and you said that in 1986 it would be possible for scientists to obtain new forms of energy in their laboratories. What were you referring to? Cold fusion. Well, it could have happened if it had been encouraged, but it was discouraged. Cold fusion is a term that's actually a misnomer. The point of so-called cold fusion is to be able to create a usable energy in a very small and easily accommodated fashion, meaning something the size of what you would call a tin can rather than some vast, expensive, complicated and potentially dangerous machine. But, of course, the people who had invested millions and millions and millions of dollars, to say nothing of time and effort, into creating these energies, which they were attempting to recoup their investment on, did not look kindly upon something that could be created and mass-produced. You could hook this up to your electrical needs using certain transformers and so on. You could basically create an independent house. So you could be independent from the energy grid. That's right, you could attach this thing to the outside of the house, and it would produce energy indefinitely with just a few little additions of this and that, without much need for insulation. There is still that potential, but real cold fusion can be successfully explored only on the basis of something small, not something large. You can try to do it large and turn it into a large thing, but it won't work very well. It's intended to work best in small units that produce small amounts and, if mass-produced, in a way that would cost, perhaps. If they were for sale right now, if the technology existed right now in mass-produced amounts, it would sell for, say, $4,500. And you'd attach it to the outside of the house and have your energy needs indefinitely. It would last a lot longer than the house. But, of course, that doesn't support the current business system that you have set up globally now. Do you think we'll have to wait for the oil to run out before it's feasible? It's feasible right now. I mean, before we can get it? Before it becomes mass-produced? It's hard to say, because obviously if it can be done in some small way, it will be done by one country or another in their space program. That's the obvious application. You can't run a long extension cord, chuckles. You can't send along some massive machine that costs billions of dollars every time you want to send up a vehicle that you cannot be sure you can get back. But if you send something along that's about the size of a breadbox, something like that, and it produces plenty of energy for the foreseeable future and doesn't cost too much. It may cost more in the beginning, but once it's mass-produced, it won't cost very much. Lots of space vehicles will have them, then military installations, then one application or another. As you say, it will filter down to the public. And by the time it gets around to being attached to someone's house, it will happen because people will be more cooperative and the planetary society is more the fact. If it went into effect right now, lots of people would lose their jobs and their investments. But if it filters in slowly, then people can adapt. Next headline, using metallic needles to prevent earthquakes. The notes from the professor say that you mentioned two minerals to use in the needles used to stop earthquakes. One was ryoseno. Is there an English equivalent? This is in the book, yes? Yes. One of them is ryoseno. Is that an off-planet mineral, or is there an English equivalent to that? I believe that's intended to be the word iron. Iron. Oh. Laughs, and xuin. Silver. It's not necessarily the Spanish word so much as it is what I believe according to the scientists would work best, the iron being the grounding element and the silver being the conducting element, so they're used together. If you use one, you have someone using one standing over here and then you have someone standing over there. You feel the best points. You don't just say, here it is, you feel the best points and then you touch the needles to the ground. You don't have to drive them in, you touch them to the ground and hold them there for a time. If the points are right next to each other, one well-trained person could do it, but you'd probably be better off using two people because then each person can attune and become comfortable with the metal he or she is holding. Some people might not be comfortable sharing their energy with iron, because if you hold it, you're sharing your energy. Other people may not be comfortable holding silver,